committee will recommence its inquiry into the prevention, investigation and prosecution of industrial deaths in Australia. And I understand we have via teleconference Mr. John Paul and Mr. Gerard Bradley. Are you with us?
Yeah, it's just myself, John Paul Bradley. My dad will not be joining us, so it's just myself.
All right, thank you. Well, welcome everybody. Just for the Hansard record, if we just go through and everyone identify themselves and the capacity in which they're appearing before the committee today, which may just be in your private capacity.
I'm Deborah Cunico in a private capacity.
Thank you.
My name is Ashley Cunico in a private capacity.
Thank you.
Regan Ballantyne in a private capacity.
Mark Murray in a private capacity.
Janice Murray, private capacity.
Patricia Kelch in a private capacity.
Thank you, and Mr. John Paul Bradley. Yes, thank you.
Yeah.
All right. So, what? Thank you for your submissions. I thought what we would do is simply let you talk to us, and then we'll just start to engage in a conversation around issues as they come up. And then towards the end of our time, assuming we still have some time, I will give people an opportunity to address us on anything you think we may have missed that we need to hear. So we'll do it quite casually and informally, I think. I think that's the best way to do it. But because Mr. Bradley's on the phone, we might just start with you, Mr. Bradley, if that's all right.
Yeah, go ahead.
Thank you. Well, I invite you now to make some remarks to the committee if you wish.
Yeah, it's just with regards to the death of my brother, Gerard Bradley, on the 25th of November 2015, and also his friend, Joe McDermott. They were also, they died at the same time as a result of a concrete panel that fell from a crane. And now the concrete panel was being lifted over the top of them. The company have admitted fault and they've been charged. They entered an early guilty plea, and we take serious issue with the small amount that they were fined. We feel that this amount doesn't actually change anything. It's a trivial amount. The maximum the amount would have been $400,000. We were told that there is a 25% early guilty plea, which is something that we also take issue with. So say, for example, that the fine could have been $300,000, yet in this instance it was only $160,000. And we just asked what more did they need to do in order to get that maximum fine. So even if you have the laws, which we currently think are very, very weak, and they don't cause any accountability or change, why would you then only charge them half of what they could have actually been charged? We also have issue with the WorkSafe report, the investigation. We feel that WorkSafe have been very, very toothless in this investigation, that they don't really have the capacity or the strength to do a real investigation. One example of this would be when Mr. Kerwin told me that his WorkSafe investigation was extensive, was his exact words. Yet whenever I asked him if he was aware that Jackson had blocked the FMEU access to their sites in Perth, he was unaware of this. And we felt that this was a line of inquiry that he, one, needed to be aware of, and two, also continue down this line to find out if Jackson were culpable in this. We are shocked beyond belief Jackson had not been charged with anything, given the fact that there were serious issues on this site and other Jackson sites around Perth that we're aware of. People that needed to be spoken to have not been spoken to, and we think that the WorkSafe report that we have not seen yet is not going to be a true reflection of the situation. And we think that WorkSafe have just, in respect, they think we've just charged the small fish whenever the real issue is Jackson and the big construction companies. which is all these terrible stories that I'm reading, it comes back to a lack of accountability. For us, Jackson, they employed a contractor to lift concrete panels, yet no one at Jackson checked the working practices of the Axdale, the company lifting the concrete panels. No one checked how they lifted. No one checked that they were using no-go regions, no-go zones. My brother and his friend were having a smoke break in an area that they were told was safe, and that was not the truth. And that there were basic kind of common sense laws, common sense steps that could have been taken that were not taken, and it resulted in the deaths of my brother and his friends. We also think that if the CFMEU have been blocked and deliberately blocked, and they have been subsequently charged for this, for their access to another site, then why are Jackson not culpable in this? And we just think that they've gotten away with everything, and that the emphasis is on small fines that are paid out by insurance companies, and it hasn't led to any actual accountability or any other change. That's pretty much everything we'd have to say on the matter.
Thank you, Mr. Bradley. We'll hear from other people now, and we'll then engage with you in the conversation as it unfolds. Ms. Cunico?
So before I begin, I would just like to make mention that my father's investigation is ongoing. So during my statement, I'll be making mention of what we have experienced the system to be like throughout the process of an uncompleted investigation. We're still yet to receive any answers and specific of the actual event that claimed my father's life. On Friday the 20th of April this year, my father, Robert Cunico, left for work at 4:30 a.m. as per normal. He worked at the wastewater treatment plant in Woodman Point. By 10:55 that morning, he was dead and never coming home in the physical sense that he rightly deserved to. My dad was 60 years old, 10 days short of his 61st birthday. 3 weeks later, he was brought home in a container much like this, reduced to nothing but ashes. He was killed in a horrific workplace incident that should never have occurred whilst 10 metres up in the air. My dad was not a blue-collar worker. He had not worked on the tools for almost 40 years. He was a supervisor on this particular job, but mostly he worked as a superintendent all over the country. He was highly skilled and highly qualified with years of industry experience under his belt. He was a massive safety advocate for himself and others, and in fact, he was highly regarded by many within the construction industry and often considered one of the safest on sites. Dad climbed up that scaffolding that morning purely to inspect a 1 metre by 1 metre steel pipe. He would have had every intention of coming back down again, yet sadly, that was not going to be the case. It was at approximately 10 a.m. that the incident occurred. He sustained injuries so severe that he didn't even have a chance to go to a hospital. Instead, he was carried down in a body bag. My dad lived for almost an hour in the most horrific of conditions while being cradled in the arms of a work colleague before succumbing to his injuries. Despite the efforts made by the first responders and emergency services, his injuries were so catastrophic, he was never going to survive. My father should never have sustained even a paper cut whilst he was on the job, let alone injuries so severe that his life was ended. My dad was a son, a brother, a husband, a father, a grandfather, an uncle, and a friend to many. He leaves behind a wife of 35 years, 3 children and 5 grandchildren, the youngest only being 1 month old when he died. After the incident that morning, it took almost 4 hours for our family to be notified of my dad's death when 2 police officers turned up at my parents' home. My mother was then faced with the unthinkable task of having to ring her 3 children to tell us of our beloved father's death, one of whom was in Thailand at the time. Receiving that call was absolutely soul-destroying and unfathomable, to say the least. I also had to call my husband, who was in Albany 6 hours away attending his own mother's funeral, for him to come home. How do you explain to a 12-year-old that his grandfather and best friend is never coming home? Or what do you say to a 5-year-old who says he doesn't want to live anymore if his pa can't live? Sorry.
From that moment on, our lives were shattered. You do not ever have a choice to survive grief. Not only has my father's death left an unprecedented emotional toll on our family, it's also left a financial burden on my mother, who was 100% dependent on my father's income, as he was the sole income earner. How on earth does someone go to work in 2018 and never come home? It is wrong that the general manager of the project my father worked on came to my parents' house that day, stood in front of my mother and blatantly lied to our, stood in front of my mother and I and blatantly lied to our faces about how my father was killed. It is only due to the fact that both my brothers have worked in the industry and on jobs with my dad that we were lucky enough to still have contact with some of my father's current work colleagues. This enabled us to have some understanding of how my dad was killed, and without being privy to this information, we would still to this day have no answers and be led to believe a lie. It is wrong that we had to wait 3 days due to the incident occurring on a Friday before we were able to go to the state morgue to see and say goodbye to my dad. His body was never identified by a family member. It is wrong that instead of planning my dad's birthday, we were planning his funeral. It is wrong on so many levels that my family has lost such an important and significant person from our lives. He was in all aspects of the word our rock, or the glue that held our family together. We will never come to terms with the fact that my dad is gone. An entire future full of dreams and aspirations has been wiped from our lives. We are now forced to travel these journeys without him. This has been made harder to process by the fact that he deserved the right to come home that day. Every Australian deserves the right to come home safe and sound to their loved ones. Through our experience of dealing with the death of my dad, we have been made fully aware of the little to no support, or lack thereof for better words, of available support for families dealing with fatalities of this magnitude. Families are left to navigate all legislative acts and laws relevant to the incident for means of support and future legal proceedings. There is no impartial advisory centre or services that offer any sort of comfort to those affected by these tragedies. Families are left to self-research relevant information whilst ultimately still trying to grieve the passing of their loved ones. For us, upon searching for both legal and industry-related answers, it is apparent that the current laws and legislations are both outdated and inconsistent between states and territories. Western Australia is currently still governed under the old OSH Acts, which I find disgraceful considering the WHS Act was legislated back in 2011. How is it appropriate that our state government has not introduced a newer reform set of health and safety laws 7 years after they have been nationally recognised? I personally see this as a matter of priority, but clearly given the lack of action on their part, it is not. It should not be widely accepted that people are dying at work. There is public outcry if someone is killed by a shark in the shark's own environment. Yet 83 people to date have died at work this year in Australia, and not a damn thing is done or said about it. WorkSafe as an industry regulator is a complete and utter failure. If WorkSafe had a stronger presence on our work sites, then perhaps some of these 83 people would still be alive. Coming out after the fact or after the incident has occurred is not acceptable. Tomorrow will be 19 weeks since my father was killed, and still to this day, WorkSafe has not collected the mobile phone from the coroner's office that was on my father's body at the time of the incident. This phone may or may not contain relevant information to my father's case. The coronial police investigators have completed their investigation into my dad's death, yet WorkSafe has not even obtained witness statements from any key witnesses. Workplace incidents resulting in a fatality must be investigated in a timely manner, and cases completed as a matter of priority, if not at the very least out of respect for the deceased, but their grieving families. Whilst I'm not standing here before you today to put the blame solely on WorkSafe, I must stress how important a role they play in the failure of our workplace cultures. The police govern the roads to ultimately deter people from doing the wrong thing, which could inadvertently lead to road accidents or deaths. Yet WorkSafe as an industry regulator are not governing our work sites to deter negligence and reckless work practices. Therefore, these companies, corporations, small businesses and individuals alike are all self-regulating, many creating unsafe work practices and cultures. I believe all of what I have previously mentioned to be an issue due to lack of funding to the relevant departments. WorkSafe investigators should not be assigned such a large number of cases that it takes 1 to 2 years or even longer under some circumstances to hand down their findings. The current Work Cover Scheme and Workers' Compensation Act for notational residual entitlement should not differ in financial value from state to state. A life lost in Western Australia is and should rightfully be worth the same as a life lost in New South Wales or any other state or territory in Australia. Yet the current acts do not reflect this from state to state. The maximum compensation my mother is entitled to is a mere $308,000. Whilst no amount of money will ever compensate my family for the loss of my beautiful dad, this amount is offensive for a life lost. The claim for compensation should be straightforward, considering it was put in place to compensate someone in time of great emotional turmoil. Yet insurance companies then have the right to be non-compliant to the Act for absolutely no reason other than delaying a payment and greed. In turn, families are required to be legally represented in a fight to be compensated for the loss of their loved ones. Where is the justice in that? Even in the event that my mother pursues a fatal accident claim, she is only ever entitled to be remunerated for a portion of my father's potential earning capacity until retirement age. Who is held accountable for the very black and white fact that my father was killed? He would have earned that money if he was alive, regardless. All this being said, under current laws and legislations, any company found negligently leading to the death of an employee are never truly held accountable for their wrongdoing or endangerment of their workers. They are merely given a small fine and a slap on the wrist, while families are left reeling to trying to deal with their loss and justice of their loved ones. The RSPCA has access to tougher provisions than WorkSafe, and this is completely insufficient. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Ms. Ballantyne.
Thank you to the committee for the opportunity to speak here today. You're looking at a woman who on her own birthed, raised and buried her son. And 19 months after my son fell 12 metres to his death through an uncovered opening on a construction site, I am here today in a federal Senate inquiry because the senselessness of his death and the injustices on top of it are so profound that it has become my human duty to have enough care for another that I speak out in the hope that by me sharing with you the story of Wesley's death, it may help inspire you all to take real action and prevent another person from losing their young life and a mother, her son. Famous scientist and environmentalist Garth Speth says, "I used to think the top environmental problems were biodiversity loss, ecosystem collapse and climate change. I thought that with 30 years of good science we could address those problems, but I was wrong. The top environmental problems are selfishness, greed and apathy. And to deal with those, we need a spiritual and cultural transformation. The construction industry indeed shares these problems, and to deal with them, we too need a spiritual and cultural transformation. When you lose love so abruptly and so young, and you come to understand that the root cause of that death wasn't really because of poor safety, it was because people didn't care. Not about human life, certainly not for one another. I can tell you what the people in charge did care about though, gross profit. Are we really still there where profits are valued over and above everything else? We need reform, and I am here today to call for it. I ask that your recommendations will see the construction industry increase training requirements to work on a construction site, which is staged, competency-based, and verified time on the job. That you support the implementation of an anonymous reporting platform similar to Crime Stoppers, so employees can safely and without fear of retribution report their concerns about unsafe practices in their workplace, and then properly reinforce WorkSafe to respond to those concerns. I ask that you have the courage to recommend that all jurisdictions across Australia include industrial manslaughter as an offence. So when those who hold the duty and willfully make decisions which disregard the safety of their workforce, be held accountable to the same penalties under current manslaughter provision. I ask that you lead us, not only as our lawmakers, but as the biggest consumer of construction services in the country. Our government holds the power and the responsibility to drive change and raise the tide of this entire industry by vigorously implementing a stronger framework within government procurement policy for demonstrated safety performance. And finally, I ask that you take the time to think of the young and vulnerable people in your families and community like Wes, and mothers like me, and recognise that one man's burden is all of our burdens, and to lead the change. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Murray?
I just think, listen to the first two speakers this morning, there's your problem. You seem to be asking the right questions, so hopefully there's something's going to come out of it. Luke was 22 when he was killed. He was killed in an unsafe work environment. You had inexperienced workers instructed to do an unsafe lift. The unsafe method was quicker, therefore it was cheaper. There was no meaningful deterrent for the employer to do it safely. You put safety before the dollar. They know they can kill a worker and get away with it. History tells you this. The devastation to the family is horrendous. The employer gets a minor fine and goes home. We get a life sentence. I want industrial manslaughter as a deterrent. So if employers kill someone, they know that they're going to sit in jail and they can think about it. You kill someone in a car, you go to jail. The long life effect on the family is devastating and unfair. It has to stop. Luke's death was not an accident. It was totally foreseeable. The packs had broken before and had been swept under the carpet. Convicted and fined in a trial, they wanted community service as their punishment. They had an appeal. After you get 28 days to appeal. On the afternoon of the 27th day, they lodged their appeal. They were the guilty conviction was upheld. The fines were cut in half. Now, that's the law, cut the fines in half. So what sort of message does that send? The second appeal, WorkSafe appealed because they appealed against the fact the fines were cut in half. So at the end of that, and bearing in mind with your legal system, they have their appeal, and then you've got to sit around and wait to have that handed down. Now, we live 600 k's up the road, and we were told about 2:30 in the afternoon at 9 o'clock the next day they were going to hand the decision down. So we had to pack up and get down 6 hours down the road and listen and get it. But at the second one, the convictions were still upheld and the fines were put back up to the original one, which was 80 for the company and 45 for each director. Now, we were told at the start of the system that if they plead guilty, they get a lesser fine. Now, when you looked at all the evidence, I'm no lawyer, but you could see they didn't have a lot to stand on yet. They went through the whole process, the two appeals, and still only got $80,000 for the company and $45,000 for each director. They would have spent more than that on lawyers. Anyway, this does your head in. I mean, since Luke's been killed, I have trouble keeping my head on the same page. It's just, you go all over the place. Right, sorry. Oh, look, that's about it, mate. It's just bullshit. Now, they went to work. All these people went to work. They didn't go to war. They went to work. And they're dead. I'll shut up now.
Mrs. Kelsch?
Good morning. I have come here today and acknowledge we live in a corporate world, and I fully understand the way our system is working. However, the fact is, we have come to dehumanise the cost of our great success in building this modern world. I lost my husband, Desmond Kelsch, 15 years ago on a building site in Myrie, Perth. This catastrophic event forever changed our lives, and having lived through it, I can tell you, there's no upside. There is no she'll be right, mate, or a fair go for all. I have continued to rear my children to adulthood and held on to our home, but this has not been an easy path to follow. If I was the only family that this had happened to, I might have just gone on with our lives and played the cards that were dealt to us. No, too many families have to try and live through the loss of a loved one because it's cheaper that way. Indeed, it has become common to see a worker die, killed by negligence on site or for the saving of a dollar. I can tell you now that death or injury at work are all too commonplace. My husband Des went to work and never came home. The next time I saw him, he was laid in the morgue, and it was my job to identify him. It was then my job to tell our children that their dad was never coming home, ever. These are moments I will remember the rest of my living life. Des went to work as normal on that fateful day and was working on the roof with his co-worker. The building shook and imploded, bringing Desi down to his death. And his co-worker, thankfully, got thrown over the wall to a safe distance, and he lives. From that day to this present time, I have stepped up from the place I was, covered in grief for my husband and our two children, who had just lost one of the most important beings in their lives. Our journey through has been eventful. Lawyers and the legal system, justice, and then none. I lose faith in a system that fails and continues to fail. It needs to change so there is accountability. It's a moral law. Once a year, we attend a memorial service to remember those that have been killed at work. And every year, there are more and more sad, broken people grieving the loss of their sons or daughters, brothers, sisters, mothers, and fathers. Trusting you all here today to understand, there are thousands of people who have had the same experience here in WA and across our great country. Making decisions to pass laws that offer some protection to the general community, which we all are a part of. Remember me and others that have survived the loss of a loved one through some avoidable fault. To hold some responsibility is to deter unsafe work practice that leads to death. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you all for sharing that with us. Can I ask this question? Is anyone satisfied with the process of investigation by the regulator?
No. Categorically, no.
No.
I just want to ask you then about the involvement of the families throughout that investigation, given that you're unhappy with it, but was there a process that actually involved you in some of the decision-making processes about prosecution, about fault, and about what their intentions were as a regulator in terms of the investigation following on to a prosecution?
With ours, they came to the house and he showed us photos and told us roughly what was going on. And I said to him, because he said this is what they were lifting packs of the tower cranes come into the country in containers, they unload them, then they're in triangles. So you put one triangle this way, the other one that way, and that's how they're packed there. One strap to two, two to three, three to four, and so on. And he said they put the chain around the bottom one and hoist it up. I said, well, that's wrong, because there's nothing holding it. And then he just stopped talking then. And he had this blank look on his face. Look, I've apologised to the bloke since this, but I said to him, that's wrong. And I said, I can understand the fact that you can't say anything because of legal implications, but I can't accept the fact that you're going to sit there with that blank look and tell me you don't know what the hell's going on. I said, I drive trucks for God knows how long, and before I got out of the cab when I come across a prang, you had a fair idea what was going on. And he says, oh, look, we can't say anything for legal reasons because the investigation's going on. And it took 3 years from the minute he was killed to get the first guilty. And a lot of that was they were investigating and they went after the directors, which was a bit unusual. And to get as much evidence as they could, they would go to this bloke or this worker and try to milk him for evidence. Then they went through all the workers and got a bit more evidence, and then they went after him. So ours took a long time. I didn't mind them because we were obviously different to every other people here. But the legal people, we didn't talk to investigators, it was their legal term, I think, we were talking to. They seemed to do all right, but it's a hell of a long investigation and you're just hanging.
So in terms of the investigative process, I'm just wondering whether you think it's a resource problem, whether it's a skill level problem, or whether it's a motivational and willingness to investigate problem.
For our son, it was a resource problem. They knew that they'd done wrong. It was having the resources to investigate it thoroughly enough, because believe me, I yelled and screamed at WorkSafe because it took so long, because the waiting was hard. But they didn't have the resources. When we went to court, the directors brought in lawyers, million-dollar lawyers, flew them in from Sydney or Melbourne, I think. We had a young girl who was with WorkSafe. I've never seen someone work so hard. Her hands were tied. There were so many questions in court she couldn't ask, because you can't, I don't know the legal system, but you can't ask it that way. These lawyers came in, they were slick, and it was money. This poor girl with WorkSafe, she lost weight. At the end of it, she lost a lot of weight. But she won under-resourced. WorkSafe don't have enough money. And we didn't win anything in the end, but the contempt of these lawyers and the contempt of the directors to sit there thinking they were basically untouchable.
Yeah.
Untouchable. I'll chime in here and say that, I mean, it's obvious that WorkSafe are under-resourced, that the motivation to carry out their task is limited. I'm almost 2 years into the process, and the case is only just sitting with the Department of Public Prosecutions at the moment. So we're 19 months in. It's still sitting in Department of Public Prosecutions to determine whether or not they will bring about an action. And whilst there is an active WorkSafe investigation, the coroner cannot conduct its formal inquiry. So it'll be 6 years from the date of my son's death before all of the process is scheduled to be completed, which is
a very long time and has a huge impact on families, especially when there are no resources for support with respect to the type of counselling that you may need to support you through such a long and arduous process.
And we do want to come back to support services that might have been offered, but did you have anything to say about the investigation?
Considering we're so early in with our investigation, I do 100% agree with what the others have said. We have had to chase up WorkSafe ourselves to see where they're at within the process. But we just, every time we see, and every time there's another death, it gets pushed, my father's investigation is pushed further back. So they are clearly under-resourced, and I'm sure they're doing the best that they can. But for the families and the victims of these tragedies, it's not suffice. We need answers for our own mental stability, if not getting justice for our loved ones as well.
Did any government agency authority actually assist you through the processes for those that are a bit further through the process in terms of making sure you're informed about the court process, how it works, what involvement you might have in it, and about coroner's inquiries? Was there support being offered with that?
I thought the coroner was very good, and he came to tell me how Desi died, and they did come and see me. But as soon as I became a widow with two small children, I'm now ineffective. What can I do? There is nothing. I have no money. I have no resources to go ahead myself or do anything like that. So what am I to do? So I think a big company can look down on you and say, what's she going to do? Is basic, and then all I had was WorkSafe, and as you say, they're very under-resourced, and they brought their barristers and solicitors in from other states. They had money, I did not. So that left me in a very vulnerable position, full stop.
Yes, well, first of all, can I just acknowledge the courage of each of the families that have found the strength to come today to give this evidence to us, that it is very powerful. And the reason that this inquiry is actually even going ahead is the advocacy of a wonderful woman who contacted Senator Marshall. And I want to engender hope in the political processes that a person can hear and the Parliament can respond and the truth can be put on the record. So thank you for that. What I want to understand from each of the families is the particular insights that you have at very different parts of the journey that you describe, and I'm interested to hear from you too, Mr. Bradleys, because you're coming from an international context, and that's important that we put that on the record, because we have a lot of vulnerable young workers from other countries who visit Australia. You've made a number of recommendations in your submissions, but what are the key things that you want to see changed today? You identified some recommendations, Ms. Ballantyne. What are the key things, given your insights, that need to change immediately? Can we start with you, Mr. Bradley?
Thank you. It's like you said, it's very, very difficult for us, given that we're back in Ireland. It's almost like we're detached from the whole situation. And obviously, because it's so painful, I've just taken it upon myself to deal with it, to almost keep my mum and dad, my sister and my other brother out of it. So I'm the point of contact. It just so happens that the only way we can get things done properly, given the time difference, is emails, which is a very, very cold way of doing things. I may read something in an email that I might not like, and I might interpret it a certain way, and obviously some of the intention isn't there, but it's very, very frustrating. They're very, very frustrating that I've got maybe 300 emails going back and forwards, and that's how I keep track of everything. What would be ideal would be some sort of kind of government link or some sort of resource page set up, which gives us information what we can do. Because like you said, we've got a lot of international workers in Australia, especially a lot of Irish, and we do know that the other family involved, we've become very close to them, but they feel even more helpless because they're not as good on the internet. They're not as good by emails. So they feel like they are completely out of the loop and that they've been left behind. Now, it just so happens that I can keep on top of this because my job means I'm on the computer and I can email people. But for someone who can't keep on top of this information, I feel for them even more so because they have no point of contact. All I have are emails going back and forth between myself and WorkSafe.
So, Mr. Bradley, if I summarise what you said, your request would be to acknowledge the reality that this isn't a process, this is about people. And that a person, you know, with a face, with a voice, with a care responsibility, manages the interactions with families, not in a family liaison role that's for the work cover, but as a genuine caring responsibility supporting families who are faced with this sort of a tragedy. Is that basically what you think would make a difference to the experience for you and your family?
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
Okay. Could I go to you, Mrs. Kelish? What's the one thing that you think, the most pressing thing that needs to change?
I think accountability is very important because just like everybody in life, if we're going to do something and we don't have to take responsibility for doing it, we'll do anything. So I do think that in industrial manslaughter law is very important. Even for me now, 15 years down the track, I feel it is important because I never got justice. So my children never have justice. If it wasn't for the support of the CFMEU, I wouldn't be here now. I would have had to go home to Ireland, which is not good enough for a country to say to me, you'll have to go home now because your breadwinner is gone. I don't agree with the attitude of the country, like in that sense. I think it's wrong. I think I should have been supported. My children should have been supported. And we should have been supported by a government body. We're building the city, and I don't think it should be built on blood.
So I completely agree with everything that you've said there, particularly the human cost of this is profound.
It is.
So I'm trying to understand clearly what you're asking us to think about recommending, and that is that there's a financial support structure that is put in place.
Yes.
If such a tragedy should occur.
Correct.
So that there is practical support for a family dealing with the crisis that is immediate and pressing for them.
Correct. And to give the resources so there is a proper investigation as to why someone is killed for going to work.
And that is a workforce.
Yes.
Work health and safety, whatever entity, whatever jurisdiction.
Yeah, I don't care how it happens. It just has to happen because I'm 15 years down the track and all these people are joining me.
Yes.
And I don't think that's good enough.
Thank you. Mr. and Mrs. Murray.
I believe that WorkSafe is totally underfunded. Totally underfunded. So you need to put more money into WorkSafe. So you have... The people that worked on our case were unbelievable. They worked day and night, very under-resourced. We never got justice for Luke. He was killed. It wasn't an accident. He was killed so that it made us feel that his life was worthless or that he wasn't important. So you have to make the punishment fit the crime. We're living with the fact that we will never see our son again. 11 years this October, but the directors got a piddly fine. They're off with their family. Good on them. I hope they rot in hell because they didn't hurt, and they knew that it wasn't going to hurt. So you have to make the fact that you can go to jail and you can sit in jail every day and remember why you're sitting there, because you killed someone. If you shot someone with a gun, you'd go to jail because you're a bad person. You kill them at the workplace, you're not a bad person.
So if I can try and understand that, one of, as much as I can, I can't understand.
You've got no idea. Unless you've lost someone exactly at work, right. You have no idea.
But I'm trying to hear what you're telling me to be clear. So we've heard evidence in other contexts that work health and safety laws trump criminal realities, that sites are treated as, well, let's make it safe, let's not identify it as a crime scene. So one of the first things you seem to be all asking for, but particularly you then, Ms Murray, that a crime has been committed and these matters need to be dealt with as a crime, not an accident.
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. Sorry, yes.
Yes, you said it very well. I'm just trying to clearly hear you.
I sometimes feel I rant.
No, you're just honouring, you know, your son.
I'm very angry. My anger comes out even after 11 years. So I just don't want anyone to be
in your situation
where I am. Yeah. It sucks.
I'd go back one before that.
Yep.
If you stopped them getting killed at work, you wouldn't have to deal with the after effects. Now, it's the dollar. Yeah, it's purely money that's getting workers killed. Now, you're never going to change that. Now, I'm not trying to ride on your parade, but you have to face the fact that it's the dollar that wins. That's purely the dollar. Now, that's big business. That's how it came across to me at the start of the first two speakers. Mm. If you lock those two in a room and they sorted that out there, we wouldn't be sitting here today. Mm.
Can I go to you, Ms. Ballantyne, because you actually have something to say about that in your submission. Sorry. You call for a new paradigm, and it's shift from, I think, what you described as the triple evils of selfishness, greed and apathy, and that you say there needs to be a shift to a care model in business rather than clearly what seems to be an exploitative one.
Yeah,
What's the one thing if you want
to... Can I run through my four very quickly? Increase the training requirements to work on a construction site. A 3-hour online white card certification is not nearly adequate. It is the equivalent of a visitor's card, nothing more. This is a really easy one that could be implemented straight away. The implementation of an anonymous reporting platform similar to Crime Stoppers. My son came home 8 days before he died and identified the hazard. You know, how easy would it have been for him or I to have reported that hazard and had it been responded to through an anonymous reporting portal? And that deals with all of the cultural issues around retribution as well. That's an easy win. Obviously, industrial manslaughter needs to be made an offence. I think we're all in agreement with that. Where you willfully make decisions to disregard the safety of your workforce, you need to be accountable under the same provisions that are there with current manslaughter legislation. And lastly, and what I believe is the most powerful implementation, is the government, as the biggest consumer of construction services in the country, lead by vigorously implementing a stronger framework within government procurement policies, where lip service to safety is no longer tolerated, and we exclude those who have a poor safety record, and you reward the ones who have safety firmly and genuinely on their business agenda.
Mm. We have had evidence that in the effort to keep contracts, the doctoring of safety records and the encouragement to not report is actually perversely being implemented, and that's allowing no transparency. Because in the end, it's not just about what's on the paper, it's actually what's in practice.
Totally, but audit them. Audit them throughout the whole process as well. Get the anonymous tip-off line, because the new world order, people are more conscious, people are more caring. The young generation coming through are turning towards the new paradigm of caring for our environment, caring for one another, not being in a place where we value profits over everything else. The change is coming.
Thank you, Ms. Ballantyne. The Cunico family.
I think that we would have to agree with what has been mentioned previously about, obviously, we're in agreement that the current provisions and penalties just are not disincentive enough for companies to do the right thing by their employees. I just want to make mention that these scenes where these tragedies are occurring are likened to time of the war. These people, these innocent people are dying in the most horrific of circumstances. It's not a single gunshot or a single stab wound. They are dying in catastrophic ways. And I think the only way that we can make this stop is prevention. So the government needs to legislate stronger, harsher penalties, whether it is industrial manslaughter or criminal conviction or penalties of some sort. It needs to be done. We need to ensure that our employers are doing the right thing by their employees beyond reasonable doubt. And whether the regulator is stronger and given tougher provision, I don't know if that's the answer, but we definitely think that the government needs to act, and they need to act now.
I think in a group very similar to yours in Melbourne a couple of days ago, they were very clear on the need for industrial manslaughter laws, not to send people to jail and not to fine companies hundreds of millions of dollars, but to provide the incentive to ensure that they make their workplaces safe. Mm. So I'm just wondering whether you
share that. That's
right, yeah.
Prevention as opposed to cure.
That's right. Mm.
Well, it works with tax avoidance. Mm. You know, if you're thinking about avoiding your taxes, you know that it carries a criminal conviction and imprisonment. I think that acts as a significant deterrent to people not paying their taxes.
Mm. The sad thing is, as I hear you talking about, you know, the white card and the need to improve it, I can hear in the same sort of echo from another place, more red tape. You know, that's the sort of response that those requests often get. It's making it harder and harder for employers to put people on. That's the kind of cultural resistance to the sorts of changes that you can see, you know, so clearly need to be undertaken.
Yeah, but they're people that just don't care.
Also, you have to make the companies responsible for their actions. They can't sit there with this smugness. When we were in court, they asked one of the directors, because they were lifting the packs over this fence, well, could you have put a gate in the fence and that way you wouldn't have had to have lifted it over? And he sat back really smugly and he crossed his arms and he said, do you know how much that gate costs? So he wasn't going to cut a hole in his
expensive fence.
My son played with his life. And you have to make them accountable. But they sit there knowing they can't be touched.
So one of the other pieces of evidence we've had is that there's an insurance now being purchased by large companies to protect them against fines if they are found guilty after this process that you've sort of spoken about is quite excruciating. What are your thoughts about insuring against the loss to profit that would be incurred if you were fined for work and health
What do you think it would be? I mean, really, at the end of the day, we're here because we want to improve safety. If you stop killing people, you don't need that. I mean, I get lost for words. All you have to do is apply a safe workplace. Like that first speaker this morning, she's going on about the employers don't know where to go and find the evidence, find the information. No one tells you how to drive a car. You know how to drive a car. If you are going to go and buy a lawnmower, you find out how to do it. If you're going to go into business, you would have some sort of concept of what that business is. Now, if you would know there's risks. You don't go and shove a bloody pen in a PowerPoint because you know you're going to get zapped. I mean, it just leaves me speechless. Mm. It's all about creating a safe workplace. Yes. But that's dollars. And that's what it comes down to.
Yes.
It's all money.
Am I wrong?
Oh, no. No, not on the evidence we've heard, Mr. Murray.
Oh, right. Sorry.
So what we might do now as we wind up is just, again, if people have got something more to tell us or there's something they think we haven't sort of covered enough or you want to reinforce anything, we'll give you all another opportunity to speak to us.
I have just one thing to say, that through my socialising, I suppose, the points of reform that I'm seeking, I've become aware of a white label application
which is similar to Crime Stoppers, which is currently available in the marketplace, which has been developed by Crime Stoppers. So that would be a really easy win in terms of implementing an anonymous reporting portal for workers, and noting that that reporting portal also needs to be clearly advertised. So I think that would be a really easy, quick implementation and is effective at helping save people's lives.
Thank you.
Just one thing I'd like to add, that there's clearly a large disconnect between what is actually legislated and required on our work sites to be safe and the actual reality of what is happening on our work sites. So, like, I think we've mentioned that the biggest thing here is prevention of these workplace fatalities, and it needs to come together again. So there needs to be a stronger regulator, whether it's privatised or whether WorkSafe is able to, I don't even know, but there needs to be, this disconnect needs to be abolished. We need to all come back together, and profit should never ever be put before human life.
Not in today's age.
No.
Mr. Bradley, do you have anything you'd like to tell us before we wind up?
I'd just like to go on record again that the CFM EU, without them, we would know next to nothing, because we're told that it's years before a work safe investigation could come back, and because they're so understaffed, and obviously because we're away from them, we're in a different part of the world, and there's a disconnect from them. But I just don't understand, how can a union be stopped from accessing a site if they have legitimate concerns? And if then two deaths happen 1 week later on the site that they tried to access, just don't understand how a construction company cannot be charged for that if they physically stop the union from accessing a site. That's something I just don't understand, why WorkSafe have not continued down that line of inquiry against Jackson and the construction company. It's just that we need to give more power to these unions. They're not in it for any other cynical reason. They're not there to slow down profit. They're not there to slow down buildings. If they need to, then great, because obviously something isn't safe, but it's just to make everyone safer and to make sure that everyone comes home. But for us, the toughest thing, apart from the size of the fine, which is a complete and utter farce, it's the fact that a body that can be there to try and help make workplaces more safe, how they can be physically blocked from accessing a site just seems it's disgusting that it would happen in this day and age.
Thank you, Mr. Bradley.
I also wanted to say that Mick Buchan was with us every time we had to go to court. He didn't get anything from that. He didn't get paid for it. His
great support.
Yeah, his support was unbelievable. WorkSafe tried to support us as much as they could, but he turned up to help us. I can remember Luke coming home about 2 weeks before the accident to say that Joe McDonald had tried to go to a site that was unsafe, and he said they reported it incorrectly on the TV mum. It was like he was the bad person. And I can remember Luke saying to me, they're just trying to make things safer. And he and I, ironically, had had a discussion about going to work and coming home safely. The unions are just trying to help, and they get cut out and reported as troublemakers when at the end of the day, they just want to make the workplace safe. I just know without the union supporting us through it all, when there was no one else there, we were very fortunate for that.
They're a great support.
Same, Janice.
Yeah.
I have to say, without them, I wouldn't be here.
Thank you. All right, well, thank you. We have, we have been around the country and getting a lot of evidence, and we do hope to be in a position to,
present to the Senate quite a comprehensive and detailed and evidence-based report, which we hope will lead to some significant change into the future. And we want to thank you for the contribution that you've made to this inquiry. So thank you.
So take a short suspension.
We'll do our best. We do have one more.
Yeah.